overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
It's April 11th today. And I was reminded that tomorrow is Rosh Hashanah. And so we are in the midst of spiritual holidays at the beginning of April. We had Easter last Sunday. The end of Passover was last Sunday. And as I reflect on that, I realize this is a time all over the planet where people are coming together to honor a spiritual tradition. A tradition that would have us reflect on how we approach our relationship to spirit. I received a phone call this morning at the center from one of the original members of the congregation who's turning 100 this month, and she invited me to come to her birthday party in Gunnersville. It was a very sweet phone call because I was with her when her husband made his transition maybe 30 years ago. And we spent so much of the time talking about him as if he were right there. And so as we reflect on the meaning of these spiritual events, what seems to awaken in my heart is that spirit was never born and spirit never dies. And what we are is spiritual. What we are is spirit. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. And so as we open to our full humanity with one another, with nature, we're experiencing that connection, that ineffable connection that we all share, the one life, God's life. And it requires that we suspend this idea that we're separate. And then we fall into this realization that there's only one life. One life. You could call it the Gaia principle. The shamans have known about this one life for a very, 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 very long time. They say all is the great mystery, the great spirit, and that we are aspects of that great spirit. And that all around us are our brothers and sisters, the trees, the birds. This morning when I came to the center, there was a sparrow voraciously pulling out the threads of the screens in the windows in the classroom where she's making her nest out of silver threads from the windows. And I looked at all the windows being decimated by the birds and I said, you have it right to these threads for your nest. You are my sister sparrow. And so in that humble little moment, there was a connection between her little beating heart and my little beating heart. And so we come this month of April to explore the idea of spiritual ecology. Understanding, as Hermes Trismegistus said, 2000 BC, as within, so without, as above, so below. And as the shamans have known, if you would have a new earth, you must have a new heaven. And so if we would heal our planet Earth, we must first have a new dream within, a new vision within, to find that hidden wholeness at the core of all life, and to breathe into that hidden wholeness so that it might manifest in our world. We come together in this moment. We bind our hearts as one, for we all form a family, formed of the one life. And so as we make a commitment, set an intention to be a fashioning factor in the world, then we can offer our heart in service to the one life. And we can invite those higher energy forms to flow through us and express as us, where we are not so much the doer, as we become this very essence of beingness unfolding in time and space, until time and space collapse and all there's left is the breath, the eternal now moment. And we are all experiencing that one moment, that one breath, that one instant of awakened perception that assists us in assuming the consciousness that is required in order to provide a perception of wholeness. And it is that perception of wholeness that is all healing, as Dr. Ernest Holmes said. And so all we're ever working on is our perception. It goes right into quantum mechanics. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. So could we cultivate a more expanded perception of our interconnectedness, or as Thich Nhat Hanh would say, our interbeingness with all creation, and then through lowly listening, discover how it is that we should be. This Sunday I'm speaking on a very simple idea of this is it. It comes from a Zen saying that said, life is perfect just the way it is. And you know how you know that? Because it is. And so this is it. This is the life that we've been given. Could we embrace it and see those patterns that have created perhaps a level of suffering, a level of unskillful behavior? And in seeing those patterns, we have the possibility to transmute them and to transcend them and to look down upon them with compassion and forgiveness. No longer blaming the world out there, but taking full responsibility within ourselves, how we're choosing to see the world. And when we see with different eyes, the world then begins to change. There is a poster in the bookstore that says, when you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change. And so we come here to change the way we're looking at everything, at our government, at our planet, at ourself, at our relationships. Knowing that we're always at choice point, we can choose to see the problem, or we can choose to see an opportunity waiting for this unconditional love to embrace. It's with playfulness, it's with creative curiosity, it's with the divine imagination that we invite this unfolding from within to emerge with ease and grace so that we might see clearly yet again. I hear that song, I can see clearly now, the pain has gone. I can see all the obstacles that were in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's going to be a bright, 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 sunshiny day. So finding the sun within your heart, put your hands over your heart if you would, and then let that beautiful light move up into your eyes, knowing that we are light beings, and when we're ready to look through the eyes of love and light, open your eyes, open your hands, and let your light shine. We're all light beings. You know, all the great spiritual truths have spoken about light. Jesus says, don't put your light under a bushel, but let it shine. In the Quran, they say, Nur ala Nur, light upon light. The Buddha who said, be a light unto yourself. So what if this metaphor is something that we can actually utilize in the way we approach this journey that each one of us is on uniquely? Knowing that there's not a right path or a wrong path, it's a pathless path, and each one of us gets to find what that is. It was Emerson that said, enter the forest at the darkest place where no path has been forged, and that is your path. Now that doesn't sound like a common sense thing. I want the path that's already been forged so I know what I can put, the Buddhist path, the religious science path, the Christian path, the Jewish path. No. Go to the forest at the darkest place where there is no path, and then create your own. Now, does that feel uncomfortable? Perhaps it does. But when you discover, once you take that first step, that life is like that unfolding journey, and each step is a sacred entranceway. It's a threshold of who will I be in this step? Who will I be in this moment? I've been studying this lovely book called Spiritual Ecology, Listening to the Cry of the Earth, and it's a compilation by my teacher, Llewellyn von Lee. I've had so many teachers, and he was the Sufi teacher. He came from England in a very, he went to a private boys' school. He didn't know how to express love, and yet he becomes a sheikh in a teaching that's all about love. I find this very odd. And when he did his undergraduate and his PhD, it was in Jungian psychology. So his pathway came from understanding the subtleties of the subconscious mind and the dreams and the prophetic dreams that he would speak about in Jungian psychology. Only to find out that when you enter into the Sufi path, they talk about these different dimensions of consciousness that exist simultaneously. In the shamanic journey, they talk about dreams. It was Don Miguel Ruiz, another one of my teachers, who speaks about the matote. And the matote are the dreams that we've all, we're living in. So Don Miguel would say, are you in my dream or am I in your dream? You know, that kind of blows the mind, doesn't it? And then if we're in the collective dream of the unconscious, is your dream something that you can participate in? As little children, I don't know if you remember this song, Emily, that said, row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. There's four merrilies for every three rows. So you're supposed to have fun, and you're supposed to row your boat, not somebody else's boat, and you're supposed to go downstream, not upstream, and have fun while you're doing it. Because why? Life is just a dream. And that's what the shamans would tell you. So I was reading Sandra Ingerman in this beautiful book, and she says, we have to dream a new dream. We have to dream a dream, and hopefully at the end of the talk today, I'm going to give you the potential for a dream about healing our planet. Because the whole premise of this very disturbing book is the planet is crying out now. She's suffering. You know, the coral reefs are dying on the planet. It's just, it's amazing what's going on to this beautiful Mother Earth. And so could we open our heart and hear the cry of the mother and let it motivate us into a different way of listening, a different way of responding, maybe perhaps saying, yes, I am here to serve you. How can I serve you? My beautiful neighbors are visiting, and they rescued a little squirrel that had fallen out of the nest. And I remember when I lived in Atlanta, I heard the cry of a squirrel. She was in my little cat's mouth, and she had fallen out from the nest. But I knew that the cat didn't go to kill the squirrel. She came to bring the squirrel to me. And so here was this little naked squirrel who'd fallen out of her nest, and my cat at the time brought the squirrel. And Trey, my husband, he held the squirrel in her hand, and that little squirrel let out one cry to like the universe, and then she left her body. It was one of those beautiful moments where I got to hold, or Trey did in this case, he held the little squirrel in his arms as she made her transition. So she gave me that gift, that experience, to realize that there is no death, you know? And last Sunday, it was my 33rd resurrection talk, which means I came here 32 years ago on Easter Sunday, and my very first talk was about resurrection. And it was Dr. Ernest Holmes that says you have to have your own resurrection if you would know what a resurrection is. But in order to have a resurrection, which is a rebirth, you must have a crucifixion. So then we get to put the hat on. What is willing to die in me so that something might be born again? Could I die to an old way of relating, a reactive way where I want to blame other people and say there's no one to blame here? We did a beautiful generational healing this week, and I got to be the mother. I love it when I get to play different genders. And I felt like after we did this beautiful healing experience, I have another daughter. You know, I have another daughter, and I have another mother. And so this is what Llewellyn von Lee, at the very end of this compilation of just some incredibly beautiful essays on how we can practice spiritual ecology, not just ecology out here, but a form of spiritual ecology within, because as within, so without. So as Sandra Ingerman would say, if you want the without to change, you have to work on the within. We have to start thinking lovely thoughts. We have to start seeing the planet healed. We have to start seeing people building bridges instead of walls. We have to see people practicing wearing masks in a safe sort of way until it's appropriate for us to take those masks off. Whether it's mass herd immunity. Someone called me and said, when are you going to take the masks off so we can come back to the center? And I went on the CDC thing and they said, until it's really safe, when you're in an enclosed environment, it's respectful to wear the mask until everybody's had their shots. And I know that everybody here hasn't. So could we practice safe spiritual ecology here at the center? At the end of the book, I like going to the end because he kind of sums it all up. And this is what Llewellyn Von Lee says. He says, we need to relearn the wisdom of listening to life. It says in the Quran, am I not your Lord? Which is Allah speaking. To which we, the creation, say, yes, we witness you. So if this is all God expressing, he says, could we learn a new way to listen to the sparrow at the window that's pulling the threads out? I have a little wren that's decided to nest on the front porch, and she's nesting right over Trey's chair. And he's a number five. He's got his owls around his chair. He sits there as the stoic person. That's his chair, and he's proud of it, until right above the chair now is Miss Wren with her little chicks. And so I said, honey, you're going to have to find another roost to sit on until she has birthed her little babies. And grudgingly, he went to the other side of the porch, but he did. So we have to relearn the wisdom of listening to life and to feeling the heartbeat of life, to sensing its soul. You know, Llewellyn talks about the animus and the anima. The animus is the male and the anima is the female, and it's the soul. And he says the earth has a soul too. It's not just humans that are soul beings. So this whole planet is filled with soul. So could we relate at the soul level to creation? You know, these beautiful bracelets were from old prayer beads, and my friend Matt, he restrung them, and they all have vibration. I feel the energy of these silly little stones that have had so many prayers over them. So when I put them on, it's like I'm putting a prayer on my wrist. See, first, there is a pressing need to reconnect matter to spirit. Form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. It's not just dead matter. Spirit isn't something that's up in the sky. But spirit is everywhere revealing it. So she says, in a true shamanic way, we have to connect matter to spirit. It's the first step. He says, all of life is sacred. Every breath and every stone is sacred. He says, this is one of the great secrets of oneness. In oneness, everything is included. It's not that the human species has some kind of superiority to all forms of life. In oneness, it is all sacred. Thich Nhat Hanh, when I studied with him, he says, the miracle is not to walk on water, as they said Jesus did. The miracle is not to walk on fire, which everybody in there is doing this in these self-help groups. But Thich Nhat Hanh says, the miracle is to walk on earth, where every step is an acknowledgement that right where you step is holy ground. That's what God said to Moses in the book of Genesis. So this is one of the great secrets of oneness. Everything is included. And within our heart and soul, we can reconnect with our primal knowing that the divine is present in everything. Now, it's that painfully simple to know that the divine is in everything and that our job is to be the sleuth. Oh, I know you're in there somewhere. Oh, I know there's a pony in there somewhere. I know that God is in there somewhere. It doesn't appear to be because you're a real jerk, but no. I know God's right in there. And if we can find that unconditional love, we're going to see that love in them. So it's all an inside, as within, so without. You know, a happy person will see beauty in the same place that an unhappy person sees ugliness. And so then the affirmation for the new heaven, the new dream is, I am beautiful, you are beautiful, this whole existing universe is beautiful. Ugliness is merely a manifestation of unhappiness. So then when unhappiness comes, could we take that unhappiness and embrace it and to hold it? Until the unhappiness lets go of us and we find that innate peace that was there all along, you know. So, he goes on to say, a simple prayer for the earth is the act of placing the world as a living being within our hearts when we inwardly remember the divine. Isn't that sweet for a prayer? Place the earth in your heart and then surrender it to God, whatever that means to you. Place the suffering earth in your heart and then surrender it to God. This is how simple he gets. We become aware in our hearts of the sorrow and the suffering of the world, and we ask that this divine love, this healing flow into us where it's needed. And through our prayers and the power of this divine, it will help us and it will help the world, helping to bring the earth back into balance. We need to reawaken the power of love in the world. Well, now when I read something as profoundly simple and as deep as that, I rest in that statement. If we're here to bring love back into the world, well then how would Patricia do it? You know? How would Emily do it? How would you do it? How would sweet Michael do it, you know? And then just say, you know, I'm here to serve in whatever way. For Gigi and me, sometimes it's by growing plants in the garden. And I feel like I'm gardening the Garden of Eden. And when then I walk in the garden, it reflects back to me the beauty. And I'm not the doer. The garden is the doer. So he ends this whole beautiful little book by saying this. When we hear the morning chorus of birds, I wake up every morning to the birds singing in my bedroom. When we hear the morning chorus of birds, we may sense a deeper joy of life and awake to its divine nature. He says, at night, this is you for you, Bill, at night the stars can remind us of what is infinite and eternal within us and within the world. I mean, what we are is existence itself. Imagine looking out into the cosmos and knowing that that's what you are. And yet looking at the garden, knowing that's what you are. You're the soil, you're the sparrow, you're the galaxies, you're all of that. So he says, watching the simple wonder of a dawn or a sunset can be an offering in itself. After I had the heart attack, I woke up every morning and I'd watch the sunrise. And I would say, I have another day on planet Earth. It was like such a sacred thing. Whatever way we are drawn to a sense of wonder, to recognize the sacred, what matters is always the attitude that we bring to this intimate exchange. What attitude are you bringing? Are you bringing an attitude of gratitude, an attitude of wonder, an attitude of appreciation? You know, this is the day that the Lord has made. I rejoice. You know, what is your attitude? I remember my mom, when she was alive, we would speak, and I would try to determine what her attitude was. Is she in a, you know, critical place, or is she in a loving, grateful place? And so, yeah, what is your attitude? It's the most important thing you bring. And he said, it is through the heart that our real connection is made. And then this connection from the heart, it comes alive within us. It's a living stream that flows from our heart as it embraces all of life. And then, he says, every step, every touch will be a prayer for the earth, a remembrance of what is sacred. Every prayer, every touch, every look, every smile is a prayer for the earth. And he talks about this as a remembrance. So in the Sufi path, he talks about remembering and forgetting. So much of what life is we forget who we are. We forget why we're here. We did a beautiful generational healing, and there was an awful lot of pain that was revealed in the collective pain body. But ultimately, the healing idea at the very end of that beautiful generational healing was this unconditional love gets to flow through us. And when it does, it sets everyone else free. It sets the past free. We know this isn't shamanic. It sets everybody free, because what we are is this unconditional love. So he's saying, could this be our form of spiritual ecology? We're here to bring this something to the world in whatever way we can. Yes, we witness you. Yes, I'm here to serve you. How can I serve? How can I remember? Try to remember that we're all connected, that these are all our relationships. And it was Meister Eckhart that said, if you've done it to the least of these, you've done it to me. No, that was Jesus himself. It was Meister Eckhart that said, if you can see God in the smallest of things, that's better than seeing an angel. So what if and Mother Teresa said, there are no great acts of love, but only little acts done with great love. So what if it's those little acts that are sacred, like rescuing that squirrel from the tree and feeding him with an eyedropper? Simple little things that may not seem. They have a cat named Trey. They named her after my husband, him after my husband. And he was the mangiest looking cat. He was down in the streets, in the gutter. I didn't think he was even possible to get him tamed. And somehow that little cat came out of the gutter and went into their arms. And now he wouldn't know what it's like to be not in his arms. I see them walking around with this cat in their arms. This was a feral cat that didn't want anything to do with humans. So miracles happen when the heart opens and we say, this is mine to do, this is mine to bring. whatever it might be. If you've done it to the least of these, you've done it to me. So Jesus was saying it's all sacred. It's not just some power out here. It's everywhere revealing itself. And then we get to approach life in a very, very sweet, organic way. It's so funny, Matt is here, and when I see him, I see Jane sitting here, his beautiful grandma. And we have projects at the end of every class, and one of the projects that Lady Jane did was the most important thing. And she did a collage, and she did all the different faces of the people. She's out there in the collage. But then she also put the dogs in the collage, and she put hearts, and she put flowers. And when you realize that it's all part of this dance, that we're here to interspirit with one another, how are we doing at that? You know, how are we doing at that beautiful exploration of life? I looked for inspiration on how to see the world in a more loving way, and I pulled out this class that I taught years ago called 7,000 Ways to Listen by Mark Nepo. And he's a poet who had cancer twice, who came back from literally the dead. And he came back with a different perception. He could see things in a very heart-centered way. And when I pull him out, he reminds me what it's like to listen to this planet at a much deeper level. And he talks about this pivot and about this fifth sense. You know, we have the four senses, but he says there's a fifth sense which awakens when spirit awakens within us, because we realize that we're seeing now with this different perception where it's all part of the oneness. And he gives us some clues how to cultivate that within ourselves. So I'm gonna share with you a little of his poetry and see if you can feel that connection within yourself as he awakens this fifth sense within all of us. First, he talks about there is a still point. And you know, stillness is the language of God, and everything else is a poor translation. So could we find the stillness within ourselves? There's that beautiful line from Scripture that says, be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know. So the stillness is the language of God, and out of that stillness comes thought, comes emotion, comes movement. And he's inviting us to go back to the still place and then listen. So here's how he beautifully phrases it. The still point underneath all that keeps moving, it awaits under every season that we can imagine. Now we're experiencing this beautiful season of spring right now. He talks about the seasons of your life, the season of when you were really young and you were struggling. Trey and I watched this show called The Wallflower about a young kid going through high school and how he was bullied. There was the season of high school. Then there's the season of young adulthood where you go to college and you get an engineering degree and you think that's going to define you. I have a law degree. What good did that do me? So then you go through a midlife, we'll call it crisis, where everything that's supposed to fall away, maybe it's husband number one, two, and three, in order for you to find this love that was in yourself. These are the seasons of life. And then if you're as lucky as me and you're 72, you've had a heart attack, and you realize that there's life after the heart attack. And it even gets more sacred. So he's talking about these seasons that we all experience. And he says there is a silent center that will keep us sane amidst it all. So it's important to find that silent center. And he says it helps us remember that the earth is the still point around which all the seasons turn. You know, I'm the gardener, Gigi's the gardener, and every year we get to experience these seasons of growth. You've had a cold winter and everything is dormant, and then in spring it's just this explosion of life and you see things that you didn't even know were there. And then every now and then a tree will be infested by beetles and you have to say goodbye to that tree, only to realize that the spirit of that tree is still there, and yet it's life. And so what is life? Life was never born, life never dies. It goes through many changes. I think that's the second law of thermodynamics. You can't destroy energy. Energy just changes forms. So could we see ourselves as that same energy? He's inviting us to that still point. The earth is the still point upon which the seasons pass. And we all have different names for this immortal ground upon which we exist. And he says, I'm going to choose to call it, this is Mark Nepo, spirit. He's a nice Jewish boy. He's going to call it spirit, the still point. Each passing year, we're asked to return to the ground of our own spirit in order to go on. And each passing year, we're asked to listen like the seed listens for the crack of light in the spring. Now, I'm an avid gardener like Sylvia is, and I've got all these little seedlings planted. And I find myself walking around saying, has that seed sprouted? But I'm not going to dig in the ground and destroy the seed. You have to wait, that's patience, for when the conditions are right, the seed will sprout. And then it sends up those two cotyledons. That's the seed that was in the shell, and it provides you with the photosynthesis for the second seed, for the second leaves to come. And you begin to realize that that little seedling is preaching a gospel of the seedling. Could we listen to the mute gospel of nature? Emerson says it's the thinnest veil to spirit. So he's inviting us, as is Llewellyn von Lee, to take your gospel from the earth, to take the good news from the earth. The planet is showing us what resurrection really is. It's showing us what eternal life is. It's showing that things come into your life to go out of your life, but spirit never leaves your life. This is the gospel. And so he says, each passing year, we are asked to listen like the seed to the crack of light from the spring. We're asked to listen to the brook for our soft gurgle in summer. We're asked to listen like a leaf for our orange face in the fall. To listen like the snow for a quiet place where we can powder down and rest. Powder down and rest. I was born in a blizzard in North Dakota. You know, it gets 20 degrees below zero in North Dakota. I remember it got to be 0 degrees and I thought it was a warm day in North Dakota. And so I know what it's like to have a snowstorm and the silence of the snow falling. And yet there's a beauty. Could even that be a gospel for those of us who are here in sunny, hot Alabama? So he talks about, in the Chinese tradition, they have a fifth season. And this is what I know I'm in, and I think many of you here are in, even the young ones here. In Chinese lore, the fifth season is late summer. It's when the glare is gone and only the color of things as they are can reach us. And it takes all the seasons to become this bare, and all the turmoil to be worn down on the edges. Now this is a metaphor again. All the loss to hold on to nothing. Sometimes when you lose everything, there's a beautiful Zen saying, it says, the house burned down, but now I can see the moon. So what if you lose everything and you can't lose what's really important? All the seasons are wearing our hands open. They're landing here. I no longer want things. He says, I only want moments. I only want moments, moments of grace, moments of revelation, moments of remembrance. I'm no longer chasing after material stuff to fulfill me. I no longer need greed and avarice and success and fame. That means nothing. I just want that moment when I can see the smile under Emily's mask looking back at me with her twinkling eyes. Just moments, simple moments. That sparrow and I had communion this morning at the window. What kind of listening sources us back to what really matters? 7,000 ways to listen. How are you listening? Are you listening with your heart or are you listening with your head? You know, we had a little conversation about how in relationships, sometimes it's the little things like the refrigerator door closing. My husband has one pet peeve. He can't stand the sound of the screen door hitting the thing. You know, it's like a bang. And he's very sensitive to noise. And when I go out to the garden and I push the screen door open, it swings back and bang. Haven't I told you that noise really bothers me? So now when I go out robustly to garden, I open the screen door and I gently place it so it doesn't bang. Now every now and then, Terry, I forget. Bang! And then we go through this, haven't I told you the screen door? And so you get through those little moments. Could I listen to, yeah. And find a skillful way to navigate. So she talks about what he calls the heavenly pivot. That's when all the papers fall out of your book. The fifth season marks what he calls the heavenly pivot, and it's a turning point in life, and I'm going to give you all the credit you're there. It's a turning point in life in which knowledge is worn into a knowing. You're not here to amass more knowledge. I'm not here to give you any information. I've got nothing to teach you, but there is an innate knowing. The Gnostics called it gnosis, G-N-O-S-I-S. There is this knowing within that arises up. If I were to say to you, Michael, do you think you love me or do you know you love me? And he would say, I know I love you. That's the gnosis. It's not a thought. So he's saying the same thing. A turning point in life in which knowledge is worn into a knowing, where watching becomes adjoining, where seeking morphs into being, and struggling with truth is worn into inhabiting the truth of struggle. We don't struggle with truth anymore. Huh. You know. But we embrace the struggle in the truth. There's a wonderful Zen saying that really irritates people, and I love to say it. It says, you know why you're so miserable? Because 99.9% of the things that you talk about are all about you, and you're not. There is no separate you who has this story and this list, this laundry list of woes and problems and identifications. That's the illusion. That's the dream. And when that dream falls away, then you're free. You're free to be that emptiness dancing, that spirit that's not shackled by any belief system or conditioned pattern. They just kind of fall away because you're no longer identifying as that. You're identifying as the breath, the eternal breath that comes and goes in this now moment. And even on that moment when we leave this mortal coil, we leave on the breath. We come in with the breath, we leave on the breath. Breath means spirit. So could we take that new order of truth, he said. Instead of struggling with truth, we know that there's a certain element of struggle that's part of life. So struggling with truth is worn into inhabiting the truth of struggle. And this heavenly pivot is a time of transformation that helps us make sense of our own experience. You want to make sense of this lifetime. You've been given this life, you know? I remember when I used to think that love was outside myself and I was destined to have my heart broken. With this one, with this one, with this one. And finally, on the great big breakup of my lifetime when I was 22, I realized that that wasn't the source of the love. When that left, I found this love that was within me. And it got so strong, I didn't need an outer reflection. And once this love awoke, I can see the perfection of having that fall away so that this could then flower. And when this love began to flower, I could see love there and there and there and there. And yet the difference was I didn't need to possess it. I didn't need to say it's mine because there was no me anymore to claim it as mine. That's the gift when this shift takes place, this heavenly pivot, he calls it. The heavenly pivot is a time of transformation that helps us make sense of our experiences then. And then all seasons lead to this season. All experiences lead to this understanding of experience. And so whatever cycle or seasons that we might find ourselves in right now, from identity to another, perhaps in a cathecting relationship, from innocence ultimately to maturity, from arrogance, ultimately into humility, from codependence, ultimately into individuation. You know, codependency is where you think you have to fix everything out there. Individuation, which you realize that everything is an individualized aspect of the one life. So I don't have to be codependent with Bubba Jake. I can just know that that one life's unfolding as Bubba Jake in that own unique way. That's a whole different shift. From arrogance to humility, from codependence to individuation, from numbness to compassion, from apprentice to master. Wow, to become a master of love. That was Don Miguel's second book called The Mastery of Love. So from apprentice to master, from master then back to beginner. They talk about the beauty of the beginner's mind. Once you think you've arrived, then it's best to go right back to the I don't know place. I have myself know nothing. This power within knows everything. And then in that beginner's mind and that beginner's heart, we're teachable. We can learn. You know, it's a beautiful way of going back to the original state. We are being steadily prepared for this fifth season, for this pivotal point, for this awakened consciousness within ourselves. And we're being slowly stripped of our resistance to the heavenly pivot. So that's my job here, is to do the pivot and then to offer you to pivot with me. You want to pivot into that heavenly place? It says in the book of Revelations, behold, there will be a new heaven and a new earth. And the voice within declares, I make all things new. So the new heaven is the new consciousness. You know, a consciousness that perceives things as interconnected, inner being as one. The new earth is the outpicturing of that consciousness. And when we see it all as an aspect of ourselves, how could we be anything other than reverent? You know, to the little sparrow who comes to the window to feast on the screen so that it might have a home for itself. Or the little wren that's nesting on the front porch. She doesn't make quite a fancy nest. She's kind of a messy nest maker, but boy, is she a devoted little mother. She flies back and forth with little worms in her mouth, and then you hear this cacophony of little chirps from the nest. You guys would love that nest. And I know that within due time, those little birds will have the strength that it requires to leap off that nest, and they'll set themselves free, and Trey can have his chair back again. That's the fifth dimension in me, seeing this perfection of life. Yeah, So that's the invitation for all of us, to learn to listen with our open heart, not with our head, and to then, as Sandra Ingerman would say, dare to dream a new dream. I dreamed a dream of long ago. I think you'll sing that for me, won't you, Emily, in the church? Da 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 dum. So I wanted to give you a dream by my beautiful teacher, Jeff Foster. It's the end of his little book. And he talks about standing strong like a rock. And he admonishes us to not see the world as a problem to be fixed, but to see the world, because if you see it as a problem, you're creating more of a problem in it. So to see the world with new eyes and then offer this dream, in the midst of what we know is happening, offer that dream. And this is how he puts it, and then I'll launch it to our closing meditation. This is what he says. Don't focus on what's wrong with the world. If you focus what's wrong, then he says, when you fight against a broken world, when you live in resistance and have a sense of inner violence, you contribute to the outer violence you see. Could we bring our peace to the world? Could we bring our knowing to the world? Not see it as a problem to be fixed, but to see the wholeness hidden within it and then call that wholeness forth. And here's how he puts it. See the world as it is. The way an artist would look at a face, they'll see the face with all its flaws, with its imperfections, with its ridges and bumps, with its crevices and creases. And he says, see the light and the dark, the love and the fight from the love. See the kindness and also the forgetting of the kindness. See it all with a curiosity and a fascination. Love the world now for how it appears, for just how it appears. There's some suffering going on the planet right now. And then hold the world in your loving arms. She is young, she's making mistakes, and she's learning. Could we have compassion with our beautiful planet? Like Llewellyn says, put her in our heart and then surrender that heart to the beloved. From this place of love, Jeff says, re-enter the world. This is that unconditional love, Sister Terry. From this place of unconditional love, re-enter the world and stand strong like a rock, illuminating the world with your powerful presence. Strong like a rock. Speak up for those without a voice. I'm speaking the gospel of Sparrow today. She's not a destructive little bird that's destroying our windows, Chris Meadows. She is a little mother who's making her nest for her young, and I gotta speak up for her. Hold the world in your loving arms. She is young, she's making mistakes, and from this place of love, re-enter the world. Stand strong like a rock, illuminating the world with your powerful presence, and speak up for those without a voice. Amplify messages of understanding and compassion, and then spread the truth. Amplify messages of compassion and spread the truth like manure. You know, they say the facts are the enemy of the truth. We don't need facts. We need the truth. What's the truth? The truth is all there is spirit. And spirit by its very nature is wholeness. And that spirit will flower when we get ourselves aligned with its perfection. So fight for what you know and love, he says, and not against what you oppose or reject. Ernest Holmes says, show me a man who is for something and against nothing, and I will show you a man who will change the world. It was Mahatma Gandhi that says, I am not against British rule over India. I am for the autonomy of the Indian people to rule themselves. So be for something and against nothing. He's saying the same thing. Be for a world that works for everyone, not against a world that is filled with abuse and forgetfulness and racism. Yes, that's there too. But could we be for a world and see it flowering where by its very nature it embraces diversity? In oneness, the universe celebrates diversity. A garden doesn't just have gourmet plants of roses in it. It has violets. And it even has poison ivy. Yes, I can say that we have poison ivy in our beautiful garden. Your attention is your greatest blessing that you can bring. So, he says, bless the world that you are birthing now with your loving attention. What you bless is receives that blessing. Do not energize a dying world with your intolerance. Gather together in your hearts with your brothers and sisters and discover your true spiritual family. Beyond color, beyond race, beyond religion, beyond belief. And unite with all of them in the name of love. And Jeff concludes by saying, now you are not attacking the world, but you're fighting right alongside her, and all the angels will fight this battle with you. What is an angel? It's a messenger from God. And what does the angel say? Fear not. Lo, I am with you always. So could we align ourselves to this angelic presence that is always there? It was John of God in Azerbaijan that so many people are going to see because he does these amazing healings. You talk about shamanism, and he says there are these guides and these angels that are everywhere available to all of us, but the trick is you have to invite them in, to invite the ancestors in, to invite these guides. Jane is here with me always, as is Paul Fulford, as is my mother. So this was the year of her 100th birthday. Would it surprise you to know that she didn't die, that she's still here, and she's alive and well in me, and she's outrageous? Because she had this beautiful heart, and she used to tell me, Scotty, that was my middle name, she'd say, the world is touched to pride, they need to be embraced. And in a world where we have COVID now, I get to embrace people with my eyes. And you get to do the same thing. Is there a difference? I don't think energetically, from a Reiki standpoint, there would be a difference. You know, we're energy beings, we're light beings, we're love beings. We're peace beings. And when we access that within ourselves, then don't be surprised as to what flows forth from you. So I invite you to just enter into this holy instant. We've been given some beautiful images from these men who recognize our connectedness to the one life that's everywhere revealing itself as this world. This world, the hidden treasure that longed to be known. And so it created this beauty all around us so that we might see it. To witness this beauty, knowing that it's only the beauty from within that sees the beauty without. It is only the love within that sees the love revealed without. It is only the peace within that sees this peace and harmony without. And so as the birds sing outside, they don't have a message, but they have a song to sing. So could we find the song of our soul and allow that soul to express itself? Not with a controlled idea that it should sound a certain way and affect a certain result, because we realize, as they say in the Bhagavad Gita, we're not the doer. There is the breath within the breath that is the doer. And as it also says in the Bhagavad Gita, have no attachment to the outcome of your labor, because spirit has no attachment to how it flowers within its creation. It just knows how to flower. It knows how to sing. It knows how to grow. It knows how to be what it is. And could we give ourselves the same courtesy by knowing that there is something inherent within us that knows how to breathe? We don't do breathing. The breath breathes us. Could we fall into that fifth season and know that there's a knowing that's so much deeper than any thought pattern that we have? And so when we get confused by life, we don't turn to our thoughts and say, what should I think now? But rather we can surrender into the beginner's mind, the no mind. And then through lowly listening, access perhaps the wisdom of a soul that never stops speaking. They say the still small voice doesn't get louder, but it gets clearer when we become still. And so we rest in that stillness that Mark Nepo pointed to. That stillness that's always there. Notice how it never forsakes us or leaves us. And in that stillness, we find this knowing. A knowing that says all is well. A knowing that says this is it. This is it. This is the moment that life has given us. And all we want now are moments, awakened moments, moments of gratitude, moments of stopping, moments of yes. We have a painting as you walk in the center that says yes, 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 1,000 times yes. So could we say yes to life? Whatever life brings us, if it's the door that slams and makes us upset, yes, there is the door that slams. I remember in A Wonderful Life when Jimmy Stewart came back to the family and he was so grateful to be alive and the knob on the stairwell that used to fall off and make him so angry. When he saw the knob fall off, he kissed the knob and said, even the very thing that I considered the great irritant became the great beauty of coming home to the truth of what we are. There's no irritation in the heart. So we breathe into the heart space. And I invite you to take the world now into your heart, metaphorically. And let it be filled with your compassionate nature. I hear that song, we are held in the hands of grace, forever safe in the arms of love. Like a child who needs protection from a mother's warm embrace, we get to be that mother right now, for the mother. We are held in the heart of grace. And so we hold the world in our heart and we surrender now this beautiful planet of ours to this divine intelligence that knows how to create wholeness and patterns of wholeness underneath the appearance of discord. And we align to that truth. We align to that healing energy. We align to that light. And now I invite you to put your hands up in true Reiki fashion and let that presence, let that light shine forth from you. Wiggle those fingers. Feel that vibration. It's real. It's not imaginary. And you're sending it out to the world. And guess what? What you reap is what you sow. And so as you sow this light, it comes back multiplied abundantly in every way. I am the light, I am the light, I am the light of this world, and I shine, and I shine, and I shine so bright. That's all we need to do. Don't put it under a bushel. Be a light unto the world, because you already are. Thanks for sending in your tithes out in virtual world. So it is.
For listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org. You create a brand new